Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for listening to Lakeshore Public Radio. 89.1 FM on the dial and streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. I'm Tom Lounge, as your host of Midwest Beat. We've got 2 hours of great music coming your way from a regional singer-songwriter who has tasted success on the national and international level. We came to love him as the frontman of Loudmouth. Remember them? Loudmouth? They were part of the big Warp Tour scene that gave us all that heavy stuff. Well, these days, Robert Rolf Feddersen and his lovely wife, Terry Ann, are doing Americana folk music. A big difference from his early days. We'll hear a comparison, and then we'll find out what they are up to these days. We also have, lots of music to play. Stay with us. It's After Your Headlines. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Tom Lounges. It's time for Midwest Beat. How's everybody doing on this fine Friday afternoon? Hopefully good, and hopefully you're staying, toasty warm. It's a little bit chilly out there, but we're going to get good weather again, I'm hearing. So coming up next week, we'll be back in the high 70s and 80s. Deal with the rain this weekend, folks. It's okay. Stay with us because we've got some great guests, locally based but nationally known. Robert Rolf Feddersen. You might scratch your head and say, Robert Rolf Feddersen, why do I know that name? Well, if you were in the hard rock heavy metal scene of the grungy type era, you might remember bands like Disturbed and bands like Loudmouth and Deftones. Well, Robert was the lead singer, primary songwriter of Loudmouth. And the first song that the world got to know him with in a big scale was this one. Let's fly away right now with Fly. Fly, going back to 1999, Hollywood Records released that major label debut, Loudmouth. And the gentleman in the studio with me, Mr. Robert Rolf Feddersen, wrote it and is the voice there. Now, let's hear what he sounded like after leaving the band. This is another song that has had a lot of airplay, and it was the first one to kind of showcase his new sound. Check it out.
I am a milkman, paid to deliver. I work in Hammond, down by the river. 4 in the a.m., nobody's out there except for the stores that are 24-hour. I am a milkman, go to gas stations, clerk behind glass says I have to be patient. Customers line up and I'm stuck here waiting, 18 more stops and my patience is fading. It could be worse, I'm not in a hearse, driving my last mile, I have to smile. Work. It makes me shiver, picking through rows of gallons and gallons, stacking up milk crates high as a mountain.
We have heard both sides of the coin. Robert Roll Feddersen. We start off with Loudmouth, 1999. And then 2010?
That was 2010.
Wow. Milkman. Big difference there between those sounds.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely getting my folk on.
Yeah. Now, you've been doing folk Americana music for, well, ever since then. Actually, before then.
Yeah. Since probably 2006, Tom.
You had huge success with Fly. Fly was a big hit. It was on a film soundtrack. Was it Varsity Blues?
It was Varsity Blues. It was the first single from the soundtrack, and it went gold in 2 weeks, which blew...
I've seen that gold record.
...our minds. Yes, you have. Yeah, which was amazing to us because we were basically a garage band on the south side of Chicago that were playing all the clubs, and we had Metallica come out and see us play at a club in Chicago called the Double Door. And it just really changed the whole trajectory of our life. Those guys saw the band Loudmouth, and they talked about us in some magazines, and then labels started coming around. And it was pretty crazy to go from being a complete, you know, garage band playing dive bars to having record labels say, hey, you know, we want to sign you. We're like, what's this? And it was the song Fly that did it. Labels were hearing Fly, and Hollywood heard it. And
well, Hollywood was owned by Disney. So, I mean, that was a pretty good parent company with a lot of deep pockets.
Super great company. And it, what was great about that label is it was in the art department. Like, so it shared basically the record label was one half, and the other half was where they did all the illustration for, like, Monsters, Inc., for just all the films.
Oh, wow.
They shared the same building. So it was kind of neat to go there because you can go to the left and go see different things being, you know, being made, like movies being made. Everything being drawn out and planned. And back then, everything was, like, 2D, so they were physically drawing things. But it was neat to go and be at Disney's grounds to sign a rock and roll, like, record deal. It was unbelievable. The big water tower for Disney's there, and, like, we're like, is this rock and roll? Then you go in and it's the record label. So
Hollywood, I mean, neat. Def Leppard released stuff on Hollywood. There was a lot of big acts that were signed to that.
Queen. Boy, oh boy, there was a Fastball. That's a band that Terry named.
They were kind of punk rockish. Heavy punk.
They were. Yeah, they were a good band. And Terry and I got to open for them recently at City Winery before COVID and all that kind of thing. But
With the acoustic thing.
We opened for Fastball, and we reminisced because we played South by Southwest with Fastball with Loudmouth. And I hadn't seen those guys since then.
Have they softened their sound?
You know, not really. I would say
that would be a weird paradox of sounds for the audience.
We were so glad to get the opener. It was a sold out show at City Winery, wow, which was great. So we got to open and play a full 45-minute set with my old label mates, and you know, they remembered me, which was great. I mean, mm-hmm, of course, I remembered them. They had the song. What was the big song? You can see the road that they walk on is paved in gold.
Oh yeah,
The Way.
The Way.
Right.
That was the name of the song, The Way, and they were super cool guys. Still, wow, out there touring, still out there making new albums and rocking it. And they're like, what have you been doing? I'm like, well, this. That's what I've been doing.
Wow. That's great. But why, after such success, did you change your sound? I mean, we were just talking off air here. Right after Loudmouth, you released, I think this was a solo-based thing,
yes,
right? Metalhead.
Metalhead.
Which had the metal sound. Yeah. Maybe we'll get to Win or Die Trying, which I don't even think was the single off this. Wasn't Speedball the single?
Speedball and Control Freak, which was used in the Osbournes season 2.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll play one of those. But I just later in the show, just to anyone who comes in late to hear the differences in the sound. But this was your first project after,
yes,
leaving Loudmouth.
Yeah.
So you were still embracing the heavy sound. What shifted gears made you go into like the Milkman sound?
I've always been a huge Dylan fan. I've always been a John Prine fan. And I've always been a Beatles fan. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Led Zeppelin. Zeppelin 3 is my favorite Zeppelin album.
Which is the least heavy, really.
It is. It's very, yeah, acoustic. And I've always loved stories like, you know, Burl Ives and that kind of thing. Like, as a kid listening to that, like, I felt like embracing stuff that I really loved to do that wasn't hard rock.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm just as big of a fan as I am of Bob Dylan as I am of Motorhead. I love Motorhead. Terry knows. I hear Motorhead, look out. Like, it makes me crazy. It really does. But I love, you know, to hear like, you know, Subterranean Homesick Blues from Dylan. That gives me that same feeling.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to just, as an artist, just embrace a whole nother genre of music that I've truly felt and put that out there and take a chance as an artist and not think about gaining more hard rock fame and more hard rock fans and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I love the music and I stand by everything I've recorded with hard rock, but I think as an artist, it was nice to kind of grow and also not have to wear leather pants.
Yeah, I think we're a little past that age
Way past the top. Yeah, so
I ran a picture recently of Quiet Riot at Hegwisch Records. And the first thing someone noticed, I was doing an in-store with them to commemorate, you know, the whole Hegwisch thing. And first thing someone says, not like, oh, that's a cool picture, was Quiet Riot. No, nice leather pants, Tom. I'm like, that's what you took
like,
from that picture?
What, right? I mean, a historic photo,
yeah,
with a historic band. I mean, like, you know, like you've been on like in rock and roll like for a long time now, and you've met everybody in the business, big and small. Like, that's a pretty iconic picture.
Yeah.
Nice leather pants.
Yeah, I had great. Put it up because Frankie Benelli had just passed, their drummer, and
yeah,
I was just commenting about what a nice guy it was, and this was my experience with them, and blah, blah. And the only thing I got, first thing, was nice leather pants.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. So, yeah, I could not fit in those anymore, and I'm sure you have.
I could not.
Yeah,
no.
Okay. So we have matured. We have evolved.
Yes.
And what's nice about this new change, is that Terry Ann, your lovely wife and songwriting partner and singing, mm-hmm, partner, is more involved now.
Yes.
Were you a metalhead, Terry?
You know, I wasn't. I used to be. How we met was I was in a rock band, and just for a little while. I've always been like garage bands growing up in high school and stuff. And back in 89, I was in this band in the summer, just for a few months. We were not good, and I got out of it. And I was working at Camelot Music and the whole thing. And my guitar player, who always had eyes for my friend Kathy that I work with at Camelot, when we were at band practice, called me up one day and said, oh, what are you doing on a Friday night? Nothing. Bring your friend Kathy and come see my friend's band. So really,
come see Loudmouth.
Yeah,
okay.
He wanted to see Kathy. So I did, and they were practicing at a Shurgard storage unit. That, mm-hmm, was their practice spot. And we sang, you know, he knew I was a singer. And And so he, you know, he wanted to know, he said, do you know the song Stop Dragging My Heart Around? I'm like, of course I do. You know, Stevie Nicks
is his favorite singer. Yeah.
And so we sang that, and we actually recorded a version of it on our latest.
It's on the album. We got the rights to record the song.
Wow. Yeah.
And it's on the latest record, Pepper in His Heart.
Yeah.
So okay.
It's the first song we ever sang together.
Do you want to do that live later, or do you want us to play it from the CD?
You want to play it from the CD? Well, I think we got a couple.
Yeah, we got some of those.
Whatever you want.
This is Stevie's tambourine.
That is her actual tambourine.
Yeah, so when Loudmouth was recording in California, you know how boring it is in the recording studio when you're not recording. So I was there, and his producer, Joe Barisi, one of his best friends, a guy named Bruce, I don't even know his last name, he came in and he's like, he asked me, he goes, you want to go for lunch? I'm like, sure. So we went out for lunch and we were talking, and I told him my saying, we were talking about music and stuff, and I told him, you know, I love Stevie Nicks. And the next day he brought me her tambourine because he was actually Mick Fleetwood's drum tech.
Wow.
So this is from the dance tour, ribbons and all. And I play
so
it at every
gig. So those
are
her ribbons too?
Yes.
Now, that was her tambourine.
You can tell they're a little tattered, but we did 178 shows
last year.
So, I mean, there's, you know.
So there's a little magic there.
Yes, there is.
You know, are you one of those performers that have that little, what's the word I'm looking for? Like charms. I had a friend of mine. It was a great lounge singer. I mean, he was really good. And he actually had a handkerchief that Frank Sinatra once gave him backstage when he was young. And he goes, here, kid. And he, like, gave it to him. And he wore it every time he went on stage. He would not go on stage without it. It was a good luck charm. He felt that he would fail miserably and the ceilings would cave in and, you know, the locusts would come if he performed without that. Do you have – is that something like that with you? Is that your gris bag kind of thing?
You know what? Maybe it should be. I haven't had that happen yet. I've always had it.
And we've always had this tambourine.
And we've always done well. I've been able to sing.
See,
so maybe.
So now I've just cursed you. I'm like, you'll never leave without that again.
No.
But there is a lot of performers that have those superstitions, I guess you'd say.
Definitely. Yeah.
Favorite guitar, favorite this, favorite that.
Have to have your favorite guitar. You have to have certain things that you bring with you on stage. That's for sure. I have this little music plaque from my stepdad, and I always put that up whenever we play. Mm-hmm. I just put it in the background on our PA system, and it just sits there and hangs. Terry's got the tambourine. This is my second favorite guitar, but my favorite guitar is my Gibson Hummingbird, which has broken strings on it right now. And that's why it's not here. But
is it because of the sound, or is there a significance to that
guitar?
It's
the sound, and it's the connection that you make with the guitar. Like when you play a guitar and you just know every note and fret, and it just like just emotes a feeling when you play it, and it's hard to describe, but it just fits. It's like a like a great pair of like Levi's, which these aren't because of COVID, but like a great comfortable pair of Levi's.
Right.
That's your favorite guitar. So I always bring my Hummingbird to shows, and I just love that guitar, just the way it looks. The Hummingbird's my favorite bird, so it just sits perched up here, and like it's just it feels like home. Mm-hmm. That's what it feels like. So when you're out playing to strangers, which we play for a lot of strangers, we do have, you know,
you're only a stranger fans, once, though, because you do have a strong following. And that's the one thing I notice is you call them fed heads, right?
Fed heads. Yeah.
They follow you pretty loyally. And you've built this following, a lot of it in the breweries.
A lot of it in the breweries, and a lot of it just by getting out there and continuing to perform. You know, I always tell for other musicians listening that the best musicians are you know, not playing out. Mm-hmm. They're somewhere else working at a company, which is fine. Whatever anyone's path is fine. But I think if you're a great musician, don't give up. Keep playing, keep doing shows, and keep building your audience. And that's what we've done over the years. And it's nice. It's nice to know that when we go play somewhere, people will come out, you know, in the Midwest.
So. You gave me a nugget of knowledge when you first came in, and we've been friends for a long time, but when you first came in and did this particular show, this particular level of your career with the Americana thing, and we had a conversation about the breweries and about coffee houses and about the return of Americana and the Mumford and Sons and all that, and you mentioned, and I have shared this with every acoustic player and every original artist, especially original artists that I know, where you said the breweries are the new hotbed. Because the people that go there make their own minds up. They want their own. They aren't going to buy the commercials for the King of Beers or the one that has the cool stream water or whatever. They're not going to buy the commercials. They're going to go with their taste. They are individuals, and that is the kind of audience that embraces original music. They don't want to hear Brown Eyed Girl again. They want to hear something fresh like the beer they drink.
Definitely.
And I found that to be such a unique parallel. The organic foods and all these different niches that are out there now for people. And the whole indie rock thing is like being reborn with an acoustic guitar. And you brought that to my attention, and I've shared that with people. They have gone to the, not to take your gigs away, but they have gone to the many, you know, craft breweries and found they can make some. That is a great suggestion. They really liked us there. You know, we play at so-and-so's bar, and we're background music. They come here, they drink their beers, and you may have a little buzz of conversation, but for the most part, they're paying attention, and they're buying our CDs because they like us.
That's the thing. I mean, they buy
CDs. So thank you for that, from everybody that benefited from that. That was the most wonderful piece of knowledge I've gotten in a long time from an artist.
Tom, I'll tell you what, that is a huge compliment to hear that from you, and I got to just share that I got a phone call from, who doesn't call me often, but I got a phone call from Steve Albini, and he goes,
who has produced your albums,
who's
for the
produced
listeners.
Three of my albums, and he said, hey, he goes, I got a great acoustic artist who is a good friend of mine. Can you help her get some gigs at some breweries? He said, I think it's genius that you go out and you just play breweries. And first of all, it's my love of craft beer. And it's also that mentality of the craft beer drinker. They're looking for something different in beer. Chances are, in the beginning, I thought chances are they're going to look for something different in music. And it's worked out because I think that, you know, people that, you know, are wanting something different are going to want to listen to something different. And now it's to the point where a lot of these places, they don't book cover stuff. They want original music, which is great. And, you know, I've turned on other musicians to that too, and there's plenty of room for everybody. If you're an original
artist, there's more
and
more craft breweries popping up every day.
There are, and they want to have nice acoustic music. They don't want full rock and roll loud bands. They want acoustic artists, and we do get loud, but you know, but it's nice to have a place that welcomes it, as opposed to like, well, we're going to have to like, you know, beat the doors down in this place and really like try and, you know, get people to listen to our original stuff.
Right.
At, like in a bar.
Right.
They want covers. In a brewery, they don't. And we've made a nice little slice.
It reminds me in some ways of the folk, being a Dylan fan, of the folk scene, especially in Greenwich Village and Old Town, where the coffee houses were the place.
Yep.
Today, the coffee houses are very hipster. I don't know what you'd want to call them.
For sure.
They're not as deep, I guess you'd say, as some of the craft, and maybe the craft beer things are changing that way too, because there are so many of them. But the coffee house was the place where the beats would go, and the think tanks, and the art people would go and hang out, and they talk about
and
stuff,
all
and
of
poets
it.
And the slams. And then the breweries started coming around, and that became, that replaced the coffee houses.
It did.
Now, do you play coffee houses still? I mean, is that coming back, like vinyl and like everything else? I mean, the retro thing, you even look retro, man. I love your new look. I do. I love the hat, the hair, the beard. I mean, it's, you're so retro. I feel like I'm sitting in 67 or something.
I'm vintage now. I'm 50, so I'm officially vintage. So, yeah, if I look retro, it's definitely because I'm 50. But the nice thing about the coffee houses, too, is like it's a nice place where like it's you know, family friendly, because some people just don't drink, and that's great. You know, we love coffee, and we play Grindhouse, so we've gone and done that.
That's Griffith, right?
That's Griffith.
Okay.
Fluid and Valparaiso. They've
good
got
people there. Good coffee.
Super good people.
Have you been to the one in Michigan City?
Not yet.
You need to. It's a great store. It's right down the street from my record store, actually.
And they're roasting there too, right?
Yes.
So you get a cup of coffee, and then you go down and buy some albums. You get jacked.
Yep. You get jacked up, and then you go buy some Fedhead albums.
Yes. Sounds good to
which
me.
Which I need to get some, by the way. I've had people come in and ask for your stuff. It is on vinyl. I know the one is.
It is. Pepper in His Heart is on vinyl.
Okay.
And I got some new copies. We sold out of our copies. I order like 500.
Okay.
And then we go out and play like 150 plus shows. So I go through them. But I do have a new batch of albums that I will get to you. All vinyl, 180 gram,
okay,
pressed at Jack White's Third Man
in Nashville.
Pressing.
I was just there.
You know the Nashville one?
Yeah.
But
they press somewhere else, like Minnesota or somewhere.
In Detroit.
Detroit, that's
yeah.
right.
He's got a pressing plant in Detroit, and Terry and I went there, and we actually got to see where the record
was
being made.
Oh, you took the tour?
Made. We took the tour.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable to go see the tour of how your record's actually pressed. I mean, it was an education.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which I don't know the process. I know there's something about acetate and something about
acetate,
cutting lacquer.
The lacquers and
then,
yeah, whether it's a metal master or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I went to the Nashville location, took the tour, and talked. Jack had just left. I didn't get a chance to talk to him, but his staff was, I guess he was flying out to Detroit. And I said, I want to see where the records are stamped. He goes, well, I thought it was Minneapolis. It's Detroit. But he goes, we'll take you through what we do here. So it was kind of neat.
Well, and they got the studio there
yeah.
and the novelty shop and all the albums that they press.
I bought a lot of Muddy Waters, Electric Mud, stuff like that.
Man.
And all the White Stripes stuff is there again. And, you know, they've done so much. Wanda Jackson, one of my greatest rockabilly heroes,
yeah. oh,
who I've had
incredible.
On the show. And she is, all her stuff is there. You know, it's like he has really taken this eclectic thing. He could have gone pop. He could
completely.
Have done been huge. But
yeah.
instead, he embraced the music as a honcho, a label honcho,
for
so to
sure.
speak, and reinvented a lot of these artists' careers. Jack is very incredible. I would love to be able to interview him one day just because
I love the guy.
The trajectory of his career.
Absolutely. And the great thing about him is he does take stuff that he loves.
Mm-hmm.
If there's something that he hears that he loves, he gets the original masters and presses the albums from the original masters. So like your 180 gram vinyl of Muddy Waters,
mm-hmm.
that's as close as we'll ever get to Muddy Waters.
Right. Like
there's nothing in between that because he takes the master and makes the records off the master. So
wow.
It's a big difference sonically, and it's all analog, so it's like, it's just a sonic experience that's unreal.
Right.
Yeah,
speaking,
I'm with you on that.
Speaking of analog, Steve Albini, who has produced your last few albums, is an analog freak.
Yes.
He loves it, and I remember, I don't know if it was last time you were here, a couple times ago when you were here, I had read an article where tape was dying. It was gone because vinyl
yep.
hadn't come back. And I understand that Steve actually like bought out a warehouse of old Scotch tape or 3M
did.
Or something.
Yeah. You know what he did, Tom? He went to Russia
okay,
and bought up all the 2-inch tape he could buy.
Right.
And he has it in a warehouse.
Temperature controlled.
Right? Yes, it is.
yep.
Temperature controlled. Exactly. You know the deal. So it's cellared.
Mm-hmm.
Like you'd sell her wine. It has to be at that certain temperature. So you're absolutely right. And he has more tape, more 2-inch tape and 1/2-inch tape than he could ever use in a lifetime.
Wow.
And he's made thousands of records.
And he probably got a great deal because everyone says, oh, you're crazy.
He,
it was like when,
yes.
You know, like when Columbia signed Bob Dylan. They're like, you're nuts. Why would you sign him? And they're looking at Steve going, you're nuts. Why would you buy tape? It's dead. You know, here, take it
and
all.
Then the Foo Fighters say, hey, we want to make a record.
Yeah.
We want to make an analog record with you, Steve. You got 2-inch tape? Yeah, he's got a ton of it. So it's definitely worked out in his favor to just persevere through the digital era and all that kind of thing. And I love it all. I'm not, I love vinyl and I love making analog records. Any way you can make music, I think, is great. But the fact that Steve persevered and he's not against digital, he just never
mm-hmm.
learned it. He just said, this is the way I know how to make records, and this is the way I'll continue to make records. And he goes, and I'm not selling insurance yet. He goes, I'm still making records. So it's a pretty neat thing.
That said, why don't we play something off the new album mm-hmm. that was recorded analog on some of that magic tape.
Yes.
And Pepper in His Heart is the new album. How long has it been out?
It's been out a year now.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been out a year, which is still young for a record. So
mm-hmm.
we'll be playing on this one for a little bit here.
Well, what do you want to play off this? I'm going to let you play DJ because you do that so well on your own radio show.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'd like to play Stop Dragging My Heart Around.
Okay, the only cover on the album.
The only cover.
Yeah, the only
that's
cover.
It, the only cover.
We're here to talk about your original music.
Right?
Your
I know,
the only
it's
cover.
The only cover.
All right.
Okay.
I like that you on the album because it is available on vinyl. You have side A, side B, even though it's a CD.
Yeah, even
that's
though it's a
cool.
CD, we still did that. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get Jose to cue that up. Stop Dragging My Heart Around. Now, this is the song. This is the song that you guys kind of met on.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot
of
emotional.
A lot of history.
yeah, and history there.
And then tambourine. Yeah.
And that's and why the I tambourine. Want people to hear it, too, because it's the very first song we ever sang together. So it pretty much put us together because Terry was supposed to meet my guitar player at the time.
Right.
And I kind of intercepted with this song. So that was it.
Stole her heart. All right, this is it. This is Robert and Terry Ann. Stop Dragging My Heart Around on Lakeshore.
Stop dragging my, dragging my, dragging my. Stop dragging my,
dragging my, dragging my.
Baby, you come knocking on my front door. Same old line you used to use before. I said, hey, well, what am I supposed to do? I didn't know what I was getting into. So you had a little trouble in town. Now you're keeping some demons down. Stop dragging my, stop dragging my, stop dragging my heart around. Stop dragging my,
dragging my, dragging my.
Stop dragging my,
dragging my, dragging my. It's hard to think about what you wanted. Hard to think about what you've lost. This doesn't have to be the big get even. This doesn't have to be anything at all.
I know.
Beautiful little fade there. Stop Dragging My Heart Around. That is newest music from Robert Roel Feddersen and Terry Ann Feddersen. And Pepper in His Heart. I almost said in his hand. It's not lunchtime. All right, Pepper in His Heart is the name of the album. And that is a unique treatment of a iconic song. Try to sing along with that, and you can get bits and pieces, but you've rearranged it so much that it's hard to even sing along with until you get to know your version.
Yeah, it's different, and I'm going to give Terry all the credit for that because she arranged the song. That was for sure, and we wanted to do something different from what the original version was.
Well, you succeeded in that.
Thank you. Thank you. But that was Terry. Terry arranged the whole thing, me starting out the vocal instead of like the original where Stevie Nicks, the female, would start out the vocal.
Mm-hmm.
She had me start it out, and then just the whole arrangement of taking it like kind of you know, like a little darker and slower, and then mm-hmm. blowing up the choruses a little more. making it a little more like folk rock.
Yeah,
sure.
there's a definite sparseness to that. I'm used to having that full produced sound, and this is like it's the dynamics, I guess, of the song, the empty spaces as well as the full spaces that
definitely
make that song work. And the vocals are haunting, the way you overlay the vocals with each other.
Yeah, Terry really had that whole idea for the song. I mean, like, we were driving to the studio because we had the idea to do it. Like, mm-hmm. Terry's like, we have to do the song. And, like, that day she called Albini Studio and said, hey, can we book a day and get in? Like, how about tomorrow?
an hour?
So we were driving into the studio and she's arranging it. Like, she's like, you start the verse and then, you know, we're both going to come in on the choruses together. And then we're going to make it, like, take it down again after the chorus and then bring it up again. And then, you know, you'll do a guitar solo for it, and which I played an electric guitar for it, mm-hmm. a 1952 Gibson Archtop. But other than that, it was this guy doing the rhythm, though. So it's still essentially an acoustic song,
mm-hmm.
but we definitely rocked it up a little bit, and it's hard not to with Albini when he gets excited. He was excited to do this song. He loves Tom Petty. He's a huge Tom Petty fan, and he was really excited to do the song, and he actually had production ideas for once, which he never tells you what to do.
Ever.
Right. He's like,
no suggestions.
we're gonna put this like room like reverb on your vocal for when you come and sing in, you know, Tom's part. We're gonna do this and that. And he's never an idea guy. He's always like, I'm gonna record what you do. This time was a little different because he got really excited about the song. So
I like the cowbell in there.
Yeah, that was my idea for cowbell.
Oh yeah.
Instead of the tap on the cymbal for that part. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like it drops out, and all of a sudden there's the cowbell. And then it comes right back again.
and then you want more.
Right.
Yes, more cowbell.
Wow.
But there's also a, is it a vibra slap? Vibra?
Yeah, you had me play it.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I know that. Yeah, with the ball on the end, and yeah.
We did that, on the American Loser album on one of the songs.
We did it on El Matador.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what's that thing we did with the, and so then what was so funny was when we were singing, it was a part where I was doing some stuff at the end, and we perform live. We play live at Albini's.
We sing together.
We sing together. But mm-hmm. I was doing a couple little things at the end to drop the song down, and you were there with the vibra slap, and you hit it once when I wasn't expecting. I almost started cracking up during my singing because you just had the funniest look on your face. You just threw it in there unexpectedly.
Well, you try and make someone laugh, like when you're recording with Steve, because he's a pretty serious guy. So I'm always the guy trying to make her laugh during a take and see if you can get through it. You know?
Yeah. Wow.
We have fun.
Record at Electrical Audio in Chicago. Steve Albini, who's worked with Nirvana, the Pixies, I mean, big names. And you have done three albums there now?
Three records and Winter Die Tryin' with him.
Wow.
So three albums and a single. So
that's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. Good guy too. Really good guy.
Now, is that because of the Loudmouth connection in the old days? Did you know him from those Hollywood record days, or is this a new relationship?
No. So Tom, I recorded on the Metalhead record, Winter Die Trying. Mm-hmm. So I recorded it at a studio in Chicago that doesn't even exist anymore. And I sent it to Steve Dahl because he's a big White Sox fan.
Right.
And it's the White Sox mantra. Win or Die Trying. At least it was in like 2005, 2006. And I wrote the song Win or Die Trying, hoping to get it to be played for the White Sox. And I sent it to Steve Dahl, and he liked the song a lot. He liked it a lot. But Steve Albini was listening to the Steve Dahl show and said, I'll re-record it. Steve Albini called in to Steve Dahl and said, I'll re-record this song. And next thing you know, I get a phone call from Electrical Audio saying, hey, Steve Albini wants to record your song Winter Die Trying, and Steve Dahl's going to pay for it.
Wow.
So I went in, and we recorded the song. Steve Dahl had booked like a 12-hour session. We were done recording Winter Die Trying in 3 hours, and Steve Albini said, I'll record with you anytime.
That's
amazing.
And
I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, okay, I'll take you up on it.
Now, how long ago was that? What was the date on this?
2006.
Okay. Now, is the version that's on here the one Albini did?
No.
This is the one you sent to Dahl.
Yeah, that's the one I sent to Dahl. That's the only one I had. So I did send that version to him, and I haven't released the Albini version yet, but I was telling you before we started the show today that I'm planning on doing that.
Okay.
And
so the one from 2006 will eventually That'll eventually get out online.
Yeah.
Well, just to give the listeners a little taste of this. This is, like I said prior to the show, this is one of the albums that lately has fallen back into my CD player. You know, you go through those cycles, and
yeah.
I remember this song from 10 years ago that I used to like, and you put it on. This is one of my kind of gear up when I'm in my home office, and I'll throw the stereo on, which I just reset up again recently. So I'm playing a lot more music at home than I used to. And this is the one that kind of pumps me up a little bit. This is the original version of Win or Die Trying. We're going to play just a little bit of this, and then we're going to see if you guys will play something live for us.
Sounds great, Tom.
All right. Going back to Metalhead 2006, Robert Rolf Feddersen. Again, showing the heavier side of Robert Rolf Feddersen. Metalhead. Metal Bands Only is on the album.
And those are a bunch of metal bands in a bin.
Wow. Yeah, that's right. Metal bins. Like you would wrap...
Like lumber?
Lumber, or, yeah. Those heavy metal bands. Wow. 2006, that came out. That is the original version, not the version that will someday come to light, which you mentioned actually has Steve Dahl singing harmony on, sort of?
Yeah. We did like a gang vocal kind of thing in that chorus. It's win or die trying, win, win, win or die trying, win.
Wow. Win. Looking forward to hearing that. Was Metalhead the name of the band?
You know what? It was a thing that I did because I wanted to get my own music licensed. Because after Fly did well, a lot of places were looking for songs from me to like place in like TV shows or movies. And I Win or Die Trying is that version is in the film Deep Winter with Michael Madsen.
Okay,
and it's like a ski rescue kind of film, and that song is in there almost in its entirety. So. I was using Metalhead mostly for like music licensing to shop and that kind of thing. So,
was it a band or was it you basically doing a project with either hired guns or playing everything yourself?
It was me, and then I had a hired gun for a drummer. So I played all the instruments.
Because the website there said metalheadtheband.com.
Yeah.
And that's what made me wonder, because there's no credits on there except you.
I think it was because when we were going through websites and that kind of thing, like Metalhead was taken. So we tried different Metalhead this, Metalhead that, and Metalhead the band wasn't. So we're like, let's just grab that for, you know, for a website.
Well, Fly? Fly was in Varsity Blue. This was in Dead of Winter?
Deep Winter.
Deep Winter.
Yeah.
We were talking earlier about the whole Hollywood Disney connection and how the graphic studio was next to the record label. And I'm thinking that had to be the lead of how you started doing songs for trailers and things. You were in what, Cars?
Cars 2.
Okay.
I did a movie trailer music for Cars 2, Flight Plan with Jodie Foster, Saw 4.
You had music in Saw 4?
Saw 4.
That's such a dark, weird movie. I can't watch it. That's creepy.
I never watched it.
I don't. All those Saw movies creep me out.
There's been a bunch. I've done probably 20-plus movie trailers throughout the years. But movie trailers are kind of cool because it's just it's a one-and-done kind of thing. Like, you know, a movie comes out and they put the music in the background for the film for, like, all the commercials.
Right.
So some stuff is soundtrack, but most of it is just for the commercials. So for
Why is that? You'd think if they run a trailer and they say, oh, man, that song really makes this trailer. It makes people go to the theater.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they use it in the movie?
I do not understand the logic how there Hollywood kind of, works at all. I just, like, stick to, like, I'll write a song and, you know, and send it out and hopefully, you know, something
If you land
good
in
happens.
The soundtrack itself, then, of course, the residuals are there for a long time.
Which is nice, unless your song is in Deep Winter and there's no residuals. So, no one knows the movie. No one saw the movie.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but, yeah, sometimes it works out. Movie trailers just, they pay pretty good, but it's a one and done. You don't get residuals from movie trailers. Soundtracks. And TV
so is that
shows.
Considered a work for hire kind of thing?
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. So I've got a friend who has a company called Static Music, and he hired me on to write for him, and I wrote a bunch of stuff for him, and I still do. It's hard to get work though with that. It's just because everybody in that business, like, it's just hard to get through to the right director, the right producer to say yes. That's the song.
So is there an agent, per se, that you would like normally to shop a song to a record label or a manager or something? Is there somebody out there that specializes in getting songs to soundtracks?
There are people that do that. A lot of that is eaten up by the record labels now.
Okay.
Major labels, like, eat up a lot of that. And they really put the heat on, you know, like, the movie studios to use their artists. Right. So. There's definitely a lot of that that goes on, but there's also a lot of room for independent kind of stuff too, which is good in this day and age. It's good that there's, like, you know, you can get your stuff out there independently without an agent. I have a friend who has, like, I won't say he's my manager, he's my friend, but he's helped me out to get some different movie things and stuff like that.
Talking about the same gentleman that was with Loudmouth?
Michael Goldberg. Okay. Yeah. He's been my friend forever. Mm-hmm. I stood up in his wedding, and he's been a
big part of your career.
He is now Rick Rubin's right-hand man and has been for a while. He's the head of A&R for Rick Rubin's label. Mm. He just signed Marcus King to Rick's label, but he's doing great in the business. Back before when he wasn't doing great and I lent him money, we got to be just great friends over the years, and we still are. He comes into town. He's from Skokie. And, I talk to him almost every day.
Talking to him when I flew you guys out, Loudmouth flew out for – you were in L.A. doing something.
Oh, yeah.
And you were playing the Star Plaza Region Rumble for me. And I remember him talking about, we got to get the guys home, blah, blah, blah. And I thought – I found out later the tour was pretty much over and you were going to come home anyway. And he was such a negotiator that I wound up picking up the plane fare. And I'm like, wait a minute, that guy really had me. You know, right? He was a good manager.
He knows the art of the deal.
Yeah, because he's
sure.
Like, well, wait a minute, they're from here. Aren't they going to come home? And it's like, well, if you want them to play this date, you know, we're not going to come home until like the following week. But if you want to play this date for a little bit of plane fare.
Yeah.
He was such a good negotiator. And I mean that in the sincerest way. He was good for you. He didn't screw me over. I'm not saying
no,
that.
No, no, no.
But he played the cards the way a good manager would. And I felt like, okay, I got the band I wanted. I got you for a good price because it was only plane fare. And you guys came in because you were home and it was a hometown concert.
It was a hometown.
And we played
for you.
Star. And we had fun.
It was great. My mother and sister
And you sold a lot of merch. I remember that.
Yeah. We sold a ton of merch. Terry's mom and dad were there. Yep. My mom and my stepdad were there. And my sister and my nieces and nephews were there. Yeah, I got to have my nephew come up on stage and strum my guitar for the beginning and Not Free. He was 4 years old.
Wow.
It was open tuning, so I just gave a pick and just had his arm going up and down on the song. That was a dream to play Holiday Star.
And I remember the plane was running late, too, and we weren't sure if you were going to make it. I was thinking, oh, dear God. But you got there in plenty of time.
Yeah.
I don't think you get the sound check that we had planned, but I think.
No, because we had Riga, who was our sound guy, and he was doing sound for you that day. So, like, Riga got there early to do sound.
And he
sound.
Had your sound dialed in.
He had us dialed in.
Yeah, had like 9 bands that day, and you were the headliner.
Yeah, which was great. We got to go on after Enough's Enough. That was awesome. That was so great. They were so mad.
That's like, funny.
Yeah, because we opened for them a long time on the South Side, and then we finally got to play over them. So thank you for that. I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
And speaking of openings, Disturbed used to open for you.
Yeah, Disturbed.
You helped get them a show. That's the thing, is the karma, the whole full circle thing. People were there to help you guys, and you in turn helped them. By getting them introduced to the right markets, right people. And they of course, took off.
And, you know, they've thanked me on every record, which is great.
I only got thanked on the first one.
I grew up with Dan, and Dan was in Loudmouth when we first started.
Donegan.
And Terry and Dan are friends on Facebook. Dan hasn't changed. He's a super nice guy.
Still local.
But still local guy. And, you know, my attitude has always been there's room for everybody.
Yeah.
To help out another artist after you've gotten help is like, I think that's the job. Mm-hmm. I think that's part of it. And that's why I've always helped out, singer-songwriters, give them, a contact at a place to get a gig or something like that. Like, I think that you get it back always.
Right.
I mean, look at the career you've had, Tom. Look how much you've given. And gotten back.
Right.
2 record stores, radio show, podcast, artists everybody. And that's because, when you give, you get. I truly believe that.
Right.
And
if you keep the channels open, and that's the thing is I think we all learned when we were younger, there's a little streak of arrogance maybe because we are all that in a bag of chips. And a little later you get older and you look back and you say, you know what, I'm not really all that. They're all that, but I'm not. But then it's almost like humility comes in.
Definitely.
And the humility with the talent. And you got to have an ego to be in this business. You have to.
You do.
On stage, to get behind a microphone, you have to have that certain, I'm really good at what I do or I wouldn't be doing this attitude. But at the same time, the humility. And I think that is the big key. And I think that is something that impresses a lot of people about you. Is you have the gold record. You have done all this stuff. But yet you're very accessible. And I think Terry helps keep you grounded, too.
Definitely.
She is an angel.
She's never treated me any different. And I got to say, I don't know that I've ever acted any different. Mm-hmm. I've definitely changed genres and music. But Terry's definitely kept it where, she wouldn't care if I was cleaning toilets or playing music.
Like, by the way, we do have a job opening here.
Gotcha. All right. She doesn't care if I do, but I don't have to.
There you go.
No, it's just nice to have that kind of the person that knows you like so well and knows me better than I know myself to keep me grounded and also keep me focused on what's always important, and that's always the music. The music's always the most important thing. All the other fluff around it is great. But I mean, if you make money and you sell your merch and you do all that kind of stuff, but without a really good song, like it really doesn't, you don't get all the other stuff.
Right.
So she's kept me into the music, having my home studio and just doing, writing songs a lot.
You mentioned how she had arranged Stop Dragging My Heart Around. How is she as far as being your muse, your soundboard? When you say, hey, I got this great song. And she's like, no, I don't think so, honey.
She's great with it. Absolutely great. And Terry has couth, and she's very tactful. She never insults me, but she's always like, well, maybe you should work on this other idea. Maybe, what about this one? I mean, she definitely doesn't have, that song stinks, but, which is good. But, we definitely edit a lot. There's a lot of stuff that I've written that I never play out because I just don't feel the confidence in it, and she doesn't either. But I will say this about Terry, the best band member I've ever had. Terry's the best. Never complains, always up for the show, always up for anything to do with our music. And we've been, tired as all get out, going to a 4th show in a row, but she always is a pro, always. Never, you've never been at a show and been rude to somebody. You've never been at a show and nah, I'm not feeling it today. You have been the most consistent band member I've ever had. You never complain. She never complains.
No.
And I don't either. I'm like, let's go. No. Let's do it.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. I'm learning from you, who's – I've never seen anybody so pro in my life. And actually, I have to say, when we were recording with Albini for the first time, Bob was up in the control room. We were in Studio B. And Steve came down. And this is the first time – you know, we've done a whole album with him, and he came down and he said, "Your husband is a pro." And he's a man of few words, and he goes, "Your husband is a pro." I said, "I know. From the day I met him, this is he's spot on, knows his stuff, ready to go, ready to go." And that was a huge compliment. Think of all the people that he's worked with.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's worked with some of the big, big names. Let's do a live song, because you've had that guitar for an hour now. We haven't played it.
And we're playing covers. And
we're playing covers and old songs. Let's play something new. Is there anything off the, not off this album that's new that you've worked on that you want to debut? Or
I'd love to do a new song that we've never played, like on a radio show. We've never recorded. We don't have it out on any other media.
I love being able to debut stuff.
This is a song I wrote about hanging with my grandfather. Recently, my mom and dad, my mom and sister have moved, and we're going through all kinds of old stuff. And I found my grandfather's fishing pole from the 1930s, and I got to thinking about my grandfather and all the fun we've had and different things that we've done. And he was a big White Sox fan, as am I. And I got to meet Ralph Garr in 1978 because of my grandfather, and hang out with him and do all kinds of fun things with him. So I wrote a song. It's about my grandfather, Lowell. His name is Lowell Adams. He was a great guy, and I spent a ton of time with him, and I got to meet Ralph Garr as a result of our fun relationship. So this is Ralph Garr, 1978.
That's the name of the song?
It's the name of the song.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's cigarettes and candy, ice cream cones and brandy. I'm going to the corner store. Lollipops and chocolate, a Isle of Fair faucet, summertime's never a bore. Black and white TV, louder than a bumblebee, White Sox host Detroit today. And Harry Carey's wasted, Falstaff brings him cases, Ralph Garr's up to the plate. I'm hanging with my grandpa, he's the family outlaw, lets me sip on his beer. Southsiders are losing, Lowell and I are boozing, I don't ever even care. Now I want some cookies, I go take a look-see inside my grandma's cookie jar. Nothing but Fig Newtons, I'd rather be puking, I think I'll grab a candy bar. Cause it's cigarettes and candy, ice cream cones and brandy, going to the corner store. Lollipops and chocolate, a Isle of Fair faucet, summertime's never a bore. Black and white TV, louder than a bumblebee, White Sox host Detroit today. And Harry Carey's wasted, Falstaff brings him cases, Ralph Garr's up to the plate. Yeah, Ralph Garr's up to the plate. It's summertime in 78.
Ralph Garr, 1978.
That's wow.
Wow. Great stuff. Now, is that going to be on another album down the road?
Definitely. It'll be on the new one. I'm working on a new record called The Distance. It's titled The Distance, and that is definitely going to be on it. It'll be my 10th solo record. So, and I turned 50 this past June, so I kind of feel like I've gone the distance. So I'm hoping there's more distance, but you know, it's just it's a song I wrote, and it's just kind of something that I felt like was an appropriate title for the new album. So working on that one, Ralph Garr 78 is going to be on.
Is there a target date for The Distance?
It'll be out in 2021,
okay,
for sure. Like probably late 2021. We're going to put some really nice effort into it and just pick the right songs for it. We're big on editing, so like if something doesn't cut the mustard, and we don't feel it, then we're not going to put it on the album. But we're going to put some good quality time into it, and that one's definitely going on the record. That's for sure.
That's
just
cool.
A fun one.
Yeah.
So
the family outlaw,
right?
Yeah. Oh, Lowell.
Good old Lowell Adams. Wow. Let me sip on his beer,
and then go for cookies.
Right? I got hungry.
Wow.